accession number 20937, reel 5.
How real five?
Yes, we were in support of the. We were assigned to support this attack on these three small hills. It was thought that these three small hills were well defended. There was lots of wire on the barbed wire on the hills. It was known that the Germans had some had gun positions on the hills, machine gun positions, and at the last moment. Yes, if I may just go back briefly to my description of the three hills. In fact, it's a bit misleading to call it three hills, since it was really a short length of high ground, a ridge, if you like, with three very high spots on it, three bumps on it. And I was taken, together with the other NCOs from my troop, by our troop commander, the day before the intended attack, to have a look at the situation and to make up our minds, since we would be approaching it in darkness, just where we would be placing our guns. Fortunately, later on the day when we should have taken part in the attack, we were stood down because the guards had decided to take only their own one troop of anti-tank guns instead of ours. On the morning, on the evening of the attack itself, we knew the expected time of our barrage going down, and yes, we heard it. Terrific noise as our guns opened up and put down a barrage. But about half a minute later, there was another barrage, which I recognise since this had happened before, with the German counter barrage. The next day, during the morning, we were taken by the troop commander past that position. There were four anti-tank guns mounted on their portees, completely burned out, which would have been our troop, and there were lots of bodies laying around. We later retraced our steps back past that position, and bodies were gathered in lines on the ground, and burial parties were still out searching for bodies. The guards must have taken a tremendous amount of punishment, and we heard later that only about three or four had reached their objective. That, as far as I'm concerned, was really the last lot of action that my troop were engaged in the Marath position. The Marath line still held, the Germans still held on the opposite side of the wadi, if you like, and part of my regiment, together with a number of New Zealanders, were moved secretly down into the desert so that they could go round and the back of the Marath, the Germans' Marath positions, and force them to either retreat or capture them. And this move was successful, and we were able then to continue and advance past the Marath positions. Well, together with other units, of course, we continued advancing along, usually near the coastal positions. On one occasion, we passed what had been an enemy airfield, and the battery, we were now with the battery, we pulled off the coast road for the night. Early the next morning, when we were preparing to stand to, the Germans carried out a raid on the airfield, which we had, if you like, just captured. One of the aircraft from that raid came towards us, obviously in trouble, and at a very low height, perhaps 75 to 100 feet up, no more. As it passed over the top of our position, we could plainly see the pilot standing in the cockpit, obviously with the hood pushed back, and he was looking down at us with a look of horror on his face. As he passed our position, he left the cockpit, came down to the ground, hit the ground and bounced a few feet, and the aircraft carried on and then crashed about 100 yards or so away. The pilot, I believe his identity was taken, and I believe arrangements were made to have him transferred back to the airfield he had been raiding.
What kind of a plane was it?
I can only describe the plane as a single-engined, low-winged monoplane. I wouldn't like to swear and say it was a Messerschmitt. Everybody says all planes like that were Messerschmitts. It probably was. But yes. We now were able to join up with the Free French Forces. We took part in a few small actions with these Free French Forces. Of course, the North African campaign by now was coming to a standstill because the German forces, the German and Italian forces, were being attacked from both sides, one side by the First Army and, of course, by the Eighth Army. They were being squeezed into what I believe has now become a holiday area of Tunis. In one case, we were in position with French troops. They were French troops from the, I believe, the Chad part of Africa, with white officers in charge. And we were able, from that position, to see the Germans in the morning before the heat haze took hold. We could actually see the Germans going to the toilet. And it was a dangerous position for us to be in, because in order to go and collect rations and water and that type of thing, we were ourselves exposed. And so my gun crew, we took it in turns in the evenings as the light failed to go back to the rear, probably about 200 yards, where we could pick up supplies. And that is really one of the last things I can remember about the North African campaign. The campaign closed. Yes, we saw lots of German who were taken prisoner. And then we were rested. We were rested then until and prepared for the invasion of Sicily. We were given quite an amount of freedom. The battery commander was very good in that respect. He allowed us to set up a small holiday area at a place called Termina. That is a small sandy bay. We put a few tents there, and a few people at a time were allowed to go there and completely relax. When it got closer to the time for the invasion of Sicily, which we knew the planning of it was mainly by air and sea, the evening that the invasion of Sicily started, a number of aircraft, we heard them going overhead, and obviously some of them were towing gliders. It was a very dark night. One of these gliders broke free and came down. We could just hear the hissing noise as it went through the air, came down and landed in an olive grove just a short distance away from us. So obviously they had broken the tow from the tug plane, and yes, for them the invasion was over. In time, we were taken to the embarkation points. There was a fair delay because there was insufficient shipping to carry us across to Sicily, but eventually we boarded a ship, and we were issued with different money and a little book called The Soldier's Guide to Italy, I believe. And the first couple of pages were Italian phrases, the type of things which would allow you to count, say yes, no, good evening, and that type of thing. And together with another sergeant on the way over, I sat there, and by the time we were landed, we virtually knew those first two pages of Italian phrases. We disembarked near Syracuse, a quiet landing. There was no activity of any kind going on in that immediate area. And by the time we made our way to our area for the night and settled down, it was getting dark. And I remember waking in the morning to find that I was lying between two rows of grapevines, and I was able to just reach up and pluck grapes from the vines. And that was my first morning in Sicily. Yes, we then moved further inland from that point. I remember on one occasion we had halted for the day. It was around noon. Again, it was quiet in the area, and so we settled down to have a siesta. It wasn't long before there was a lot of noise. One of the lorries, which was covered with a camouflage net, part of the net had caught fire, and the driver had jumped in the lorry to try to drive it away from the flames, and in fact was setting fire to the whole of what was like a hayfield. And so we all had to jump to it to move out. We were actively engaged towards the end of the Sicilian campaign in trying to push the last of the Germans off the island. And I remember clearly on one occasion when in the evening we had to climb a very steep road. And on the way up there was the odd lonely little farmhouse type building, but we pushed on and travelled through the night. An attack was supposed to take place in the morning on a clear piece of ground on a height, and we came up as it started to get light through the what were clouds forming round the mountainside, and it turned out to be a nice morning. The infantry started their attack. The only casualties that they sustained were from S mines which had been planted in the type of grass that was growing in that area. And so there were no Germans to be seen or at that particular time.
Do you remember which infantry they were?
No idea. And yeah, on another occasion, again, we were on a minor road leading up in the mountains, and we were held up by, there was a village built near the top of the rise we were climbing, and there was an archway over the road. German machine gunners had positioned themselves there and were holding up our convoy. Aircraft were called in to deal with the position, and we saw them attacking the small town on the top, small village on the top of the hill. We then continued our advance, and when I passed under the arch, it was a shocking sight to see that all these little houses, what was left of them, were still burning, and there were bodies of these civilians were lying there, blackened. And no doubt there'd only been a couple of Germans up there in the first place, but now the whole of that village, including some of it, had been blown down the side of the hill, and now the whole of it was destroyed. And I've never forgotten that sight. And I would like to end there regarding our campaign in Sicily.
Which was the worst for you, Sicily or North Africa?
Oh, North Africa, without a doubt. Am I still on there?
Yes.
Oh, right, yes. We were then, now that the Germans had all left the island, we were taken to the rest area, not far from Messina. And by then, I had been feeling rather ill for some time. And we reached that rest area, and I can recall a lot of pain, stomach pain, and I was unable to keep anything down. And lying in my little bivvy, I can remember my crew coming to me and trying to get me to drink something, and I could only take a mouthful, and it came out again. I lost consciousness for part of the time, and in the morning, a couple of my crew carried me to the set up medical centre by the regiment's medical centre, and I was put in the back of a jeep and taken to what had been a forward hospital, where on a stretcher I was kept and examined for a couple of days, tried to give me an enema to find out what was wrong. They couldn't even do that. And then I was sent back to another hospital, which had been set up, I believe, in part of a convent or something. And there I had a bed on the veranda, and they started to give me some white powder, and I slowly improved so I could start eating some things. I was offered anything I wanted to eat, asked whatever I fancied I could have, but anyway, yes, I started to eat. I was then sent to a base hospital, and whilst there I heard that another one of my regiment, another sergeant from the regiment, was there, and I went along to where he was in what was a ward, if you like, and sat on the edge of his bed talking to him, Sergeant Morrison. And I looked at the person in the bed next to him and recognised a lad from my childhood, somebody I'd grown up with and played with whilst I was a child. And I leaned over and touched his arm and said, "Hello, Sonny." And he looked at me and he said, "Who are you?" And I had to tell him who I was, and he didn't recognise me. And he said, "In your hair." Well, my hair was, as a lot of us were, was bleached white by the sun. And that was one of the reasons he couldn't recognise. And yet we'd grown up together. Contact him now. And then, being well enough and hearing that our regiment was one of those that was going to be sent back to England, I made sure I was well enough to return to my regiment, and got back to them in time to see them take part, although I didn't take part, in invading across the Messina, Straits of Messina, to the tour of Italy. Our anti-tank guns were positioned right on the water's edge, and the idea was it was a night attack, that they would fire on fixed lines, having picked up aiming points on the other side of the straits, and this would help to guide the boats as they went across. The tracer from the shells, from our anti-tank shells, would help to guide the boats across. Although I didn't take part in that myself, I did go across couple of days later in a boat to see, since most of the guns had been trained on what appeared to be strong points or blockhouses on the other side, so that they were doing a double job of guiding the boats as well as possibly making people on the other side keep their heads down. Yes, went across in a boat to have a look to see if there was any damage had been caused, if any.
What disease did you have?
Yes, I'll tell you now. Am I still on air?
Yeah,
fair enough. What disease did I have? I didn't have a disease, I suppose, as such. Years later, I had that trouble from there on. I asked the medical people what the powder was, and it turned out to be the same as McLean's stomach powder. I obtained that, and from there on I was taking it. And now this is getting on to another time, of course. I used to take this when we came back to England, but before I come back to England, I will say some more about that. I always had jars of McLean's stomach powder with me, and I was able to dose myself up.
Is that an antacid?
Yeah, oh yeah, sure. And but of course, afterwards, I'd left the forces. I was examined and told there was nothing particularly wrong. And subsequently, I was x-rayed, and they found scars of duodenal ulcers, and peptic ulcers. So presumably that's what I was suffering from all the time. Whether it was brought about, I don't know. But that's, and I still, let me say, take medication to this day. However, we want to continue.
Please.
Yes. For me and my battery, we had seen our final action in the Middle East, although some parts of the regiment did take part in some of the landings in Italy. I'm not quite sure whether it was Anzio or other parts, but some parts of the regiment were sent and did take part in some of the landings in Italy. And then the whole of us, all the regiment, eventually we left Sicily, sailed from Port Augusta to Algiers, where we disembarked and were taken inland, presumably to help us recuperate a bit, to a tented area where we were given freedom to visit Algiers if we wanted and that type of thing. I think we were taken there for about 2 or 3 weeks, and then we boarded a large ship, a large liner, in fact, to bring us back to this country. That's interesting. We boarded the liner, which was called the Franconia, and I believe she was a liner which was in France at the early part of the war, and I believe she was brought away from there. excuse me. Was brought away from there and brought back to here, to finish being fitted up as a troop ship. But anyway, yes, the liner Franconia. And one interesting thing, we boarded late in the day, and up on deck, I can still recall the people who acted as dock labour were the Pioneer Corps and people like that who had been brought out specially for that, or engineers. They were down on the docks and they changed crews, and the crew that came along to the docks to help with the loading and things of that nature thought that we were people who had just come out from England, and they started to shout things up at us like, get your legs brown, get your knees brown, and that type of thing. And there was almost a riot. The amount of stuff that was thrown at them from on deck, these are people who had come through the whole of North Africa, if you like, and Sicily, and these people down below who'd probably been out a few weeks were now. And yes, there was red caps had to come along and quieten things down. That's one thing I can remember.
Where was that?
Algiers. That was Algiers. We then sailed on home. Nothing very exciting about that. We came through the Straits of Gibraltar. I remember seeing a hospital ship going by, all lit up with all the lights on. And we eventually pulled into Liverpool. I can still recall how everybody crowded up on deck. This held quite a lot of people, this Franconia. And because we were all crowding on and looking over on the side that was at the docks, there was a little band down there playing, and we were all crowding over. The boat itself was leaning over at such an angle that through the loudspeakers we were instructed to disperse again and wait till we were told to disembark. And yes, we eventually disembarked. By then it was late in the day. We entrained and made our train journey through the night. I don't know by which route, but we finished up at Felixstowe, where off the train we were placed in civilian billets. Stop for that. Yeah. So now we were in our civilian billets in Felixstowe, and after a few days, and I should have mentioned earlier that we now landed back here in the country in December, and after a few days in Felixstowe, probably about the 18th or 20th of December, we were sent on disembarkation leave. Yes, we were on leave over the Christmas period, and obviously for all of us, it was a splendid time to be back. We'd done our little bit, if you like, and yes, like most of them, I suppose, it was a time for meeting back with the families, going out, celebrating, drinking, especially with it being Christmas. The only thing that I brought back that was of any use to my family, that was my mother, if you like, was in the bottom of my kit bag, I'd placed a lot of nuts and had brought them all the way back from Sicily. And they came in very handy that Christmas time. No particular memories of the leave itself. I spent quite a lot of time out drinking, catching up with news and that type of thing. Yes, and then it was a case of going back to rejoin the regiment in Felixstowe. I can remember being called into the office, the battery office, that is, the office that was set up for battery, to be told that charges against me during the time we'd been in the Middle East, there were two of them, had now been scrapped, and there was no record of those charges. The two charges I'm referring to were on two occasions when I was charged with being absent from my post in action. The first occasion was when we were on one of Monty's left hooks into the desert. We'd come to a standstill in the evening, and the soft vehicles in the centre, the guns on the outside, we had to post a lookout, as we always did anyway, for the night. And unfortunately, the only watch, only one watch in my detachment, was passed around from one crew member to the other, so that we took our turn keeping a lookout for the night instead of sleeping. The person who had the watch at the time fell asleep. Our troop commander, a man by the name of Evans, approached my gun position in the dark. He wasn't challenged. And when he woke me, he wanted to know who was supposed to have been on lookout. I replied that I'm responsible all the time for the lookout. He then placed me on a charge. And before it was light the next morning, I was tried by torchlight, and was reprimanded for failing to keep a lookout. Second occasion when that happened, towards the end of the North African campaign, again, I was missing at dawn stand two. What had happened, some of the gun positions were on the forward side slope of a hill. I was in a position on the rear side of a hill, and during the night, a lot of shell fire and mortar fire were falling on the forward side of the hill, where one of my great poles was in position. And I decided, before it got light in the morning, to go up over the other side of the hill to see if he and his crew had come through the night okay. I did that. They had. And when I got back to my position in the morning, the battery captain was there, and I was placed on a charge for being absent from my post. Again, I was tried, and severely reprimanded. But now, back in England, I was told that those charges had now been squashed altogether. Well, we were now made aware of the fact that we would be taking part in activities to follow, which